This is the Pet Podcast on pets.ca, episode number 30 for November 3rd, 2007. Hey there, pet lovers, and welcome to the 30th Pet Podcast on pets.ca. My name is Marco, and we are coming to you from Montreal, Quebec, Canada. So on today's show, this is our 30th show, actually. It's our Pearl show. So hope this will be a pearl of a show. Yuck, yuck. Actually, we have a really good show today. It's going to be another interview with Dr. Lee. And today we're going to discuss good treats for pets. You know, we often give our pets lousy treats, and we're going to take the benefit of Dr. Lee's great advice, and he's going to suggest some good treats that we can use, and when those treats might not be so good, actually. So it's definitely worth a listen, and you're definitely bound to learn something. But before we get into it with Dr. Lee, I'd like to thank very much Belinda for her comments on last week's podcast, and also Mark Serra for his comments and contributions to last week's pet podcast. In case you haven't listened, last week's pet podcast, number 29, was a bit of a sad one where Mark Serra's pet Crinkles was euthanized by a humane society, even though he had microchips and tags. And it was quite a sad scenario. And, you know, I don't want to get back into it now. This week's a happy show. But thanks so much for the comments. They're always appreciated and they always help move the show forward. And, you know, as news progresses on that story, of course, people can comment on it again in the old story. And, you know, we'll reference it. So before we get into today's interview with Dr. Lee, the positive news story of the week comes to us via the Ryan Battle Observer in the United Kingdom. Yep, far away, but it's a good story. In the UK, they're having a National Veterinary Nurse Week. And in the UK, you know, I don't think we have that here. Here we have veterinary technicians, but there they're actually called veterinary nurses, and they do all kinds of helpful tasks that help vets do their jobs better and more efficiently. You know, they take x-rays and they help prepare treatments and they help after surgery, and they really do a lot to help out veterinarians. And they decided to make a National Veterinary Nurse Week in order to help give appreciation and show some recognition for the valuable work that they do. And, you know, they totally do. You know, our own vet has an assistant, a vet tech, actually, and she's amazing. And, you know, they don't get enough recognition. Often it's the veterinarians themselves that get the recognition. And, you know, even nurses in hospitals, human nurses, often don't get the recognition they deserve, whereas doctors do. So I thought it was really cool that they were recognizing veterinary nurses in the UK, and, you know, just wanted to give them a paws up. As always, you can click the link in the show notes and you could read the full story there. So now that we've done our positive pet story, it's on to our interview with Dr. Lee, where we talk about good treats for cats and dogs, and let's get right into it now. So I'd like to welcome back Dr. Lee to our podcast. This is actually our 30th podcast, so we've done 30 of these suckers, and I'm really happy that Dr. Lee is here for our 30th. Today we're going to talk about good foods, or good treats for your pet, rather, and Dr. Lee, as always, can share his insight on the matter. So, hey there, Dr. Lee, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Always a treat. So, I know there's a lot of confusion as to what foods are good for pets. I know that, you know, in our extended family, there was this German Shepherd that was fed only like table food. And he lived to be pretty old, but as we know, it's not the best thing for pets. He loved lasagna. He loved it with extra cheese, and he would cry when there wasn't enough cheese on it. He would get the extra cheese, but we know that that's just not super healthy for pets. You know, what's your opinion overall on like table food for cats and dogs?
Right. We all hear those stories, and I do get a lot of clients coming in and say, well, doc, you know, my dog lived to be, you know, 200 years old. And I fed him nothing but raw chicken and nothing else whatsoever. And we do have to have a balanced meal. And I think that as long as 80% is a high-quality dog food, be it home-prepared or commercial-grade, I think as long as it's a balanced quality diet and 80% of that, of what they're eating, is that diet, then I think up to about 20%, we need to give them we can give them the treats that make them happy.
And that's really, really what we wanted to discuss today, I think, is what treats are decent treats for dogs and cats to get, you know, after they've already been getting their main nutrition from high quality prepared food or store-bought food, let's say a premium brand usually being best. So in terms of like treats, we know that overall, and I guess before we should start, you know, some dogs do have allergies, some cats do have allergies. If you're getting signs that, you know, your pet is allergic or has a tendency to be allergic, obviously, you know, you should see your vet first. I guess even before we start, how do you know if your pets are really allergic? Are most pets allergic to foods? Do most pets have food allergies? What kind of risks are we taking if we give our pets treats outside of the dog food or cat food regimen?
Well, food allergy is something that we do see. I would say that if you're worried in any way that your pet may have a food allergy or any other type of allergy, that I think seeing your veterinarian would be the first step. As far as figuring out if your pet is food allergic, you're typically looking at a food trial, and those will often take about 8 to 12 weeks. So it's not an easy question to answer.
Just out of curiosity, in your practice, in your experience, what percentage of pets do you see have food allergies?
Well, it's more when we take a look at dogs that have allergies, then there's a subset of those that seem to have food allergies. And there seems to be about 10% of allergic dogs that are truly just food allergic, and there's probably about a third of dogs that have some degree of food allergy along with environmental or flea allergies or other types of allergy issues. As far as human treats, if we're looking at the various human foods, I kind of break them down into protein, carbs, and fat. And I think the one that we really need to try to avoid on that list is the fat. Dogs and cats are not used to the high quality of grease that sometimes accompanies human food, and inflammation of the pancreas can be, in some cases, a threatening to even life-threatening situation. There's a lot of evidence that these high-fatty meals may trigger off an inflammation of the pancreas. When we take a look at proteins and carbs, I think a lot of it has to do with, obviously, cats are going to be more drawn towards protein, as that's what they're primarily going to be consuming, whereas with dogs, as they get older, a lot of times you want to steer a little bit away from the protein. And then in other circumstances, we may be wanting to steer more towards it. If your pet's not having any type of medical issues, and even if they're older, if all the blood work's looking great, then I think that you can kind of give what makes them happy. Again, moderation is kind of the key, keeping it lean. As far as different types of treats that we can give, a lot of people give dairy products, yogurts, cheese, ice creams. The one thing to keep in mind is that there are a number of dogs and cats that are lactose intolerant. So if you start to see any type of intestinal upset, vomiting, diarrhea, excess flatulence, then we need to back off the dairy.
Because it really is, I mean, usually or often, it's common sense, right? I mean, we want to not feed them cheeseburgers, but if we give them some yogurt or dairy, that's perfectly okay to do, providing they're healthy. But if we see there's a reaction, just stop, right?
Correct. It does come down to some common sense.
Okay. And then, so I know a lot of people also give, especially dogs, cats are pretty finicky. I know my cat is very finicky. He doesn't like a lot of the stuff that most dogs will just inhale. But in terms of, let's say, fruits and vegetables, so what would be some good fruits and vegetables that we could use as treats for our cats and our dogs?
A lot of people do like baby carrots. Those are easy. They come in nice big packages of small carrots. Bananas are good.
Do cats like bananas?
Most of the cats I've seen will only go for the meat, the tunas, chickens, the meat. But then I've known a number of cats that love all kinds of strange things. There's a number of cats that seem to like baby's breath off of flowers. I've known a couple cats that will do anything for a french fry. So I think there's kind of a range with the cat.
Okay. And again, even with the cats, I mean, obviously French fries suck for humans and animals, but if it's one French fry a week, if the cat's eating well, not a big deal, right?
I think they're going to be okay.
Yeah. Okay, good, good. They'll survive. In terms of other fruits and veggies that might be good, what about like greener foods? Does that pose maybe stomach issues perhaps? I don't know, celeries, broccolis, will they not touch that type of food?
Celeries, broccolis are great. Broccolis are a great source of nutrition. Cauliflowers, a lot of different squashes. Pumpkins, yams, those are all good. A lot of times doctors will add in things like canned pumpkin to increase fiber content in a dog's diet.
And as snacks, also perfectly good if, you know, if they're eating well, a snack of pumpkin if your dog is into it. Yahoo, right?
Sounds great to me.
Okay. And then what about if we get into actually grains? I know a lot of people, in terms of like training, when they want to give their dogs treats, they say that their dogs will do anything for a Cheerio, let's say. Again, same type of premise, Cheerios in general, not bad for dogs that aren't allergic to them?
I think Cheerios are great. I think most of the grains are going to be pretty safe. A lot of people will use different breads. I think breads are fine. I know my dog personally likes a little bit of blueberry muffin in the morning. And so I think, again, most of the various grains, let's skip beer.
Right.
I think
call.
Going to be fine.
In terms of bread, I mean, you know, these days humans are trying to eat better as well. I think most people will agree that brown bread, better for humans than white bread. Does the same apply to dogs?
There's going to be a lot more nutrition. Again, I think because with people, we're trying to make this as a of the mosaic of what our nutrition is, we're trying to make sure that each one of those little pieces are of the highest nutrition. With dogs and cats, again, they're getting that high nutrition from their primary diet. So because this is a treat, I think whether you're going whole wheat or white bread, I think a lot of what is convenient is probably going to be just fine.
Okay. So again, really the thing that we don't want to do is we want to stay away from the really fatty foods, which, you know, we're not going to get into lists of fatty foods, but I think we have enough good sense to know that, you know, what fatty foods are, cheeseburgers, you know, heavy pastas, heavy, heavy cheeses in huge doses. Those are going to be stuff to avoid in general, right?
Right. And like for, let's say you're cooking pasta, the pasta is fine. Going a heavy amount of the Alfredo sauce probably is not that good.
Right.
If you're going to be cooking a steak, giving them part of the meat is much, much better than giving them that border of fat. I've had quite a number of patients come in on emergency that had been fed that ring of fat around the steak. Had they just given them the tasty medium morsel that they were eating, they probably would have avoided that emergency visit.
Do you think that could also be like a rule of thumb? If it's really bad for you, it ain't good for your pet either. You know, like fat, for instance, people know that if you're eating a smoked meat, let's say, okay, we don't want to advocate really giving pets smoked meat. But like we say, if it's just from the center of the smoked meat and it's lean for you, it's probably lean for your pet. And the bad stuff of the smoked meat, which is all that thick fat. So in general, is it, if it's good for you, is it generally okay for your pet if it's a treat?
That's actually a hard question to answer.
Yeah, it is. It is. There's so many variables there.
There's a lot of variables, and I would have to say that I think there's been a long period of time that we have had that attitude of what is generally okay for us is going to be generally okay for them. As we've started to learn a lot of different species variables, we've learned that what may be toxic for one species may be safe for another, and there seems to be some very poignant exceptions in the dog and cat world of what we can eat, which is, again, maybe a future podcast. So there are some really big exceptions to the rules that defy common sense. I do think one of the things that is always a great idea, especially if your dog has medical conditions, a lot of the things change with kidney issues, cancer issues. Those will dramatically change where we want to steer the diet towards. For example, most patients with cancer, we want to steer them away from grains, away from the carbohydrates. We want to go heavier into the proteins and actually even heavier into the fats. Whereas with kidneys, we want to steer away from phosphorus. Dairy is absolutely out. We want to steer away from a lot of the protein. And even that's under, you know, a bit of controversy. But so I think that when you do have an issue of your patient may have of an advanced age, changes on the blood, maybe an actual diagnosed disease, always talking to your veterinarian and figuring out what are the safe treats is always probably the best. And even if you're just have a normal, healthy dog, if there's treats that you want to give, just running it by just to make sure it's not one of those off-the-wall exceptions like macadamia nuts, which can paralyze pets. Just making sure that it's not something, a strange exception, is always a good idea.
Right, right. Because, like as we said at the beginning, whereas yogurt is perfectly good for a healthy pet, not good for a pet with kidney problems, as you just mentioned. So we have to be aware of these things that, you know, even though they may have been able to tolerate that food as a treat when they were well, don't necessarily assume that that treat is going to be good for all conditions. We're really talking, you know, the foods we mentioned at the beginning, you know, Cheerios, bananas, yogurts, broccolis, these are generally good for pets that are healthy. But once they become unhealthy, as a general rule, I think probably the safest thing, obviously, is to contact your vet, but then maybe back away from those foods if you're not sure, or back away from those foods when they're ill.
Correct. And when they're not ill and when they are healthy, you know, again, there's no reason to deprive them of that. I've given my dog quite a bit of ice cream and yogurt. And, you know, my cat used to drink cereal milk out of my bowl when I was done. So I think that, you know, again, because some of these may have, dairy may not be appropriate for one pet, it doesn't mean that we need to restrict it from all.
Very good point. So I guess my 20-second recap of all this, and I believe Dr. Lee will agree, will be just, you know, in general, give your pets a high-quality food, and then if they're healthy, there's no reason why they can't have the occasional treats, you know, and if they start to get unhealthy or if you suspect that there are issues, of course, contact your vet. Would you agree with that perfectly sound logic, Dr. Lee?
That sounds like an excellent summary.
Okay, cool. So thanks so much for doing this with us, Dr. Lee, as always. I think maybe the next podcast, just it stands to reason that we do with you, might make sense to talk about some foods we should avoid. So, you know, is that a topic you're into covering the next time?
That sounds great.
Perfect. So thanks again, Dr. Lee, as always, and we'll be speaking to you very shortly.
Fantastic.
Have a good day. So I'd like to thank Dr. Lee again for another very informative podcast. He was here for our 30th podcast, Yahoo, and we hope to do another 30 or 50 or 100 more of these suckers and get as much good information out there as possible. I do believe that our next podcast again will be with Dr. Lee, where we're going to discuss bad pet foods and foods you should definitely avoid. I'd like to mention, as always, that Dr. Lee is a great vet, and if you're looking for a primary vet or you want a second opinion, Dr. Lee practices out of Phoenix, Arizona and Mesa, Arizona, and you should definitely give him a look-see if you're looking for a great vet, and some info from his website can be found at aachospitals.com, link again to go in the show notes. As always, comments are greatly appreciated, and you can comment via the blog, www.pets.ca/blog. You can join and be a member. It's free in our bulletin board, and comment directly in our bulletin board, or you can comment through email, pets.ca@gmail.com. You can send me topics for discussion or future podcast ideas. You can tell me if you liked something, if you didn't like something, you can tell me whatever you like. And it'll help move the show forward. In order to get these podcasts automatically, you can subscribe via iTunes button on the front page of the blog, or you could just plop the address www.pets.ca/blog into your favorite podcatcher of choice. I personally like Google Reader for this, but you can use whatever you like. So thanks so much for listening, everyone. And as always, please give your pets a hug, an extra hug, and an extra scratchy under the chin from Marco. Bye for now.